we're still going to receive the presentation today on the website. So, and immediately after the apologies. So I think having welcomed you, we should actually start the apologies, and then I would address the approach that we have shown to be given today. You notice that I'm still remaining a little bit from that. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I think the issue that you have just raised is very important that I address. I think it's common cause that there was a portfolio committee of energy last week, Tuesday, 10 morning, where respected attempt together with officials of the Department of Energy. It's also a common cause that I was part of the head of state meeting in the middle, which the chair was informed about, and which is a statement that it was also acknowledged. So, long and short of
Thanks very much, Minister. Honourable members. Honourable Fahmo.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. On behalf of the Honourable Member, we accept the apology of the Minister. We do note this communication that led to that unpleasant situation in our nation. We accept the apology.
Thank you very much. On that note, can we proceed? I think we should. Thank you very much, Minister. And on behalf of the committee, I think we acknowledge the steps that we take. And as far as properly indicated, we accept the approach. We go to something that is happening in the future. It is our understanding that we have worked very well with the government.
Energy, Honorable Major.
thank you for the opportunity to address the Portfolio Committee of Energy on the topic of wealth crisis. The presentation will be in two parts. I'll give a general introduction and some thanks, and then the official zoning department will also give more details on all the elements that I will be touching on. It is a fact that South African fuel prices have reached the highest levels ever. The current price levels are of great concern to the government, mainly because as fuel prices increase, they also reduce households' disposable income, which has a multiplier cost impact on the South African economy. This is due to the need for each and every consumable product to be conveyed by the various modes of transport. There has been a great concern and anxiety on the part of the public when is a simple cost to the economy. Our government, labour, business, civil society organizations, and the general public are even missing on the negative impact of these prices to our economy. These concerns are also shared by your Portfolio Committee of Energy, and I'm therefore very pleased that we meet today on this very important matter, and that will explain how we got here and how best we can address this matter to the benefit of all. For instance, as I will leave shortly, I trust that the committee members will realize that resolving this challenge is not a quick fix and requires multi-dimensional effort. These high levels of oil prices, as a result of increased international crude oil price, the resultant increase in the refined petroleum product prices, and the deterioration of the rand value against the US dollar over the past few months. It is also possible that there have been increases in the fuel as well as the road accident fund basis in the budget that was tabled by the Minister of Finance and which you as parliamentarians approved as part of government's revenue generation efforts. Our country has a well-developed petroleum sector, which in the main is run by the private sector. The petroleum sector made a contribution of about 8% to our GDP. It employs over 100,000 workers, most of whom are in the retail sector. It has a takeover of over 36 billion rand. It pays over 72 billion rand in duties and levies, and it has a capital expenditure of about 10 billion rand. There is not a single economic sector which does not impact petroleum products. Without the availability of petroleum products, these economic sectors will be severely compromised. Just to put into context, without petroleum products, except electric vehicles, no cars will be driven. Goods cannot be delivered by road trucks. Coal cannot be delivered by trucks to electricity generation plants. Land cannot be cultivated to produce food. The fishing industry will be severely affected. Police and our army services will not be available to contain their duties. No airplanes will fly over our skies, just to mention. Without the refining of crude oil, much needed chemicals to produce other commodities will also not be available. To manufacture all these products, petroleum products, South Africa has a well-established crude oil sector. have been dependent on importation, of oil for 80% of all world demand. The other approximately 20% is contributed to a synthetic world industry, mainly fossil oil and petrol. Last year in 2017, South Africa imported 90% of its total crude oil requirement. Saudi Arabia was 9% and made 24% and more 20%. Smaller quantities were also imported from other countries to meet the crude oil requirements suitable for South African refinery diets. This importation is done by owners of crude oil refineries. Main contributions to the latter South African fuel crisis are international factors, namely the levels of international crude oil prices, levels of international refined petroleum products, the levels of the rand dollar exchange rate. All these contributors to the levels of South African fuel prices are once again influenced international events, of which I will highlight the most important ones. Firstly, the high fuel costs are mainly the result of a decision by oil producing and exporting countries OPEC to support the high crude oil price. I was there in OPEC sitting in the It should be noted that between 2014 and January 2016, crude oil price had collapsed by more than $80. OPEC intervened by removing 2% of global crude oil production. The crude oil price then rose from $80 in 2016 to the current price average. In addition, the U.S. policy towards the Islamic Republic of Iran is now threatening to remove an additional 2% of global oil production when the U.S. unilateral sanctions on crude oil exports from Iran resumes in November 2018. Another factor that contributes to this high oil price is the ongoing intense strike in Venezuela, which has reduced oil production in that country by more than 50%. Venezuela, as you may be aware, is also under U.S. financial sanctions, which among others makes it difficult for them to reinvest in oil producing. But we last talked about the cause of the high crude oil price is the instability in crude oil production itself that followed the regime change in India in 2011. There has also been an increase in crude oil demand due to the worldwide economic recovery under conditions where OPEC has curtailed production. The high demand for crude oil under conditions of constrained supply has an increasing impact on the levels of international crude oil prices. And added to all these factors is the rand dollar exchange rate, which is the yearly between the central. Oil and petroleum products are purchased in foreign currency. The recent U.S. policy on the implementation of increased import tariffs and the impact of this on trade have had a negative impact on the exchange rate of many emerging markets, including South Africa. Since the 7th of August 2018, the rand has depreciated to the U.S. dollar, culminating in a negative impact on future. I would like to indicate that had it not been for the latest drought of the emerging market currencies. So we have witnessed a downward different trajectories of the US currency. As things stand, weakening rand still has a negative influence on price outlook for the channel. We must also indicate that our country is not alone in facing these high world prices. Even oil-producing countries themselves have had to endure higher world prices since the beginning of the year. What are the interventions possible to turn around the situation? Firstly, we must recognize that crude oil prices are cyclical. As indicated, we moved from $115 per barrel in 2014 to $28 per barrel in January 2016. In the short term, we have had to intensify our fuel saving measures, including improving driving habits. We will have to intensify engagements with oil producing countries with a view of indicating to them the impact of these high crude oil prices on developing economies, but also seek to obtain pricing regimes that will be favorable to our economy. The technical teams from the Department of Energy and National Treasury that have started to work on the review of the oil price structure, as was indicated by the President about 2 months ago when he sat up and dealing with matters, to see whether there can be any adjustments to be made. We have to finalize this framework for the exploration of oil and gas. We have better control of the cost of oil with the domestic production of oil and gas. So that's why we're hoping shale gas in the Kazoo come off shortly. Chairperson, the slides that we'll also be following allows the team get into more details on all those matters before we can get into it.
Thank you very much.
So you're going through the presentation that we have. I'm starting on slide 12.
Thank you very much, Professor. Thank you, Honorable Minister. Honorable members, Honorable Minister. Good morning. Good morning. We thought that we should start by also just giving an indication of the petroleum value chain, because it does have an impact ultimately on how the retail price of the fuel is then developed. If we were to start with the ship, the vessel on the Kessa next to the undersea pipeline called the SBM, crude import, I will move from there to storage to the refinery in a clockwise fashion. As the Minister has indicated, all the crude oil that we use in South Africa, all of it, is imported. What is not imported is the coal to liquid and wet and weather. 100% of the crude oil is imported. And that is something that until the minister has indicated there has been exploration on our shore and discovery of oil, it's the reality that we have to use it. That crude oil is brought by a vessel, and as the minister has indicated, last year most of that crude oil came from Saudi Arabia, came from Nigeria, came from Angola. West Africa has become a very important supplier of crude into South Africa. It then is offloaded in KZN to a piece of equipment very important called the signal buoy mooring, SBM, which is also operated by the oil company. It moves into storage at crude oil, and then of course into a refinery and it is refined. And then from the refinery, then the refined product moves into what I would call tank farm. And then from the tank farm, it is then transported. And there are modes of transporting the refined product. It's either through pipeline mainly, rail, through Transnet, and then through road tankers. As regulators, we prefer that most of the fuel is transported through pipelines, because it is usually the most efficient way of transporting fuel. But also, in South Africa, the current reality is that the refineries that we have in the country are not able to meet the demand for liquid fuel. We import a lot of finished products, and that finished product is the one that we begin to have a picture of at the top of the refinery, because it then comes via ship and then it goes to storage and also joins another refined product. And then from the pipeline and the rail, it goes to storage and then it's transported by road tankers then to the service station, and then we get the petrol and diesel that we need. Some of that is then taken to commercial customers. And in fact, the differential between what commercial customers pay and what we as motorists pay can be explained by the fact that there are further steps that the fuel has to get through before it gets to the consumer. So to manage all of this, there is a legislative framework and two very important pieces of legislation. One is the Petroleum Products Act, which empowers the Minister of Energy to regulate the prices of petroleum products. It also empowers the minister to license manufacturing, wholesaling, and retailing of petroleum products. The other important piece of legislation is the Petroleum Pipelines Act, which is administered by NAFTA, and that one effectively regulates petroleum pipeline and power storage of petroleum. Now, because we are an importing country, the policy position that was adopted is that of applying the import parity principle. And effectively what we require of the refineries in South Africa is to be able to produce fuel in a manner that competes with their international counterparts. So they have to be efficient. So we apply basically a principle that says what would it have cost if we imported
that well refined. They must be able to deliver fuel to the South African customer as if that fuel was imported from the most efficient refineries in the world. We apply a cost recovery principle, and then, of course, as you know, the petrol prices are regulated at retail level. The price of diesel at retail is not regulated. So effectively, the oil companies are free to compete in as far as the retail price of diesel is concerned. Also, we decided to intervene on the price of LPGs. The minister indicated that at the retail level, this needs to be regulated because we had prices that were running away. This was in 2010. Also, the maximum refinery, maximum retail paraffin is also regulated. Now, of course, it is common cause that it is very difficult to police the retail price of paraffin because it is sold in tens of thousands of outlets. And if we cannot have enough inspectors, even if we're to use municipal inspectors, to be able to monitor that. I think it is important that citizens are able to tell us where someone is charging for the maximum retail price. We publish every month through regulation published by the minister, the wholesale price of diesel, and then, of course, as I indicated, we apply the most efficient transport mode into the fuel price. So if I can return quickly to the previous slide, just to say that it is important that the Transnet pipeline operates efficiently, because if the assets that they develop are not prudently acquired, then that inefficiency we end up filling at the petrol pump. So currently, NERSA's, one of NERSA's mandates to make sure that they look into the prudence of acquisition of assets by chance. I've already spoken to the import parity, but we also have a regulatory account system. Basically, that sets a retail, wholesale, secondary storage, and distribution margin. And I will talk to the slide that then talks about the composition of the pump price, because I think it is of interest with the committee and also to South Africa. We've taken the housing price as an example because this is the what it costs today for ULP unleaded petrol manufacturing. So this has been published in regulation, and the retail price of petrol. I'll use one example because the rest, all of these different margins apply across all of the products. So it's 16.93 cents that we take, and of that, effectively, then the basic fuel price, which is immediately above that, the contribution of 7.61. That then is the import parity price. That's what it will cost in the fuel price. The balance of that made up of the margin also the, as indicated, the fuel levy currently sits at
1337, and then the road accident fund, there we just have the 1193. Those by far are the ones that are quite significant, but also then is the retail margin, which is the 1187. That is what goes to the retailer. And in the value chain that we show, each of those players needs to get a margin, basically to recover their cost of transporting or doing business in the petroleum sector. So we set a margin for wholesale, that has to be there, and then for storage, for distribution, and then of the one that is called the Rupert differential only applies to paraffin because paraffin is not transported by the oil meters. It's transported by other players in the sector. Then there is the differential that is applied where different zones basically following magisterial description. And for each of these, there is a different price because it is because of the cost that it takes to basically give fuel to those zones. There is something called the DSML that I need to talk to because I think in the team that the minister has mentioned, between ourselves and the treasurer, we are looking very closely at that DSML, but of course, work is involved in the field consultation that has to take place. The DSML is the demand side management levy. I apologize for the fact that this is not the right input. So that levy is applicable inland, in the inland provinces, and in fact it was meant to, at the time, to discourage the use of unleaded petrol and fire. Because at the time we felt that in high altitude, there is no need to use 95, you can use 93 because of how engine technology was at the time. However, the vehicle technology is now developed. We are now going to start an engagement with the vehicle manufacturers as well as the fuel sector player to discuss whether we still need this differential going forward. However, I must admit that there are a lot of cars in South Africa that were manufactured a long time ago. So they don't have the computers that are there in many newer vehicles today that compensate for altitude. So we cannot do something and then find ourselves that the older vehicles and are not able to cope. This is technical, and I can't go into detail yet, but this is a matter that we are looking at quite closely as one of those areas that the minister has given us a deadline of the end of September. To deliver a recommendation to the Tom Minister before. The rest of the slides really talk to how the retail market is calculated and what goes into that. And at this stage I felt that perhaps we can leave that for meeting, but this is how historically it was done. We had a small business bureau of the University of Northwest that every year did a survey for us to look at annual and the average annual temporal sales. And then you adjust by July. So effectively, the annual operating cost, we don't just come up with them. These are audited figures that they submitted to us to say what is the operating cost of the service station and what has been the annual petrol sale. And then all of these are then adjusted by CPI, and the asset base of the retail sector is then also adjusted by the producer price index. We then obtain the total volume of products sold from the oil company. Then every year, as part of the operational expenditure cost, the electricity adjustment is also factored into the retail line. Because every year the price of electricity goes up, goes up by this adjustment. But the trend lately has been up, and that then, the retailer pays electricity, so they must recover that cost of electricity. So that can also go into the price, the retail price that we pay. The last, but very important also, is that the bargaining chamber of the water industry, which is the MIPCO, they every 3 years decide salary increases for the petrol and what then happens is that the increase that has been achieved between industry and labor is then factored into the fuel price. The wages of corporate attendance are basically regulated. We monitor this at certain stations. We know that there are those who take chances, but we are assisted here by labor organizations to make sure that the wages that the corporate attendance reflect what we pay at the central pump. This is adjusted every September, and in fact, in the next month, it's going to be another adjustment. At the beginning of the 2010, we had an objective saying that the 55,000 successful attendants that we have in the country need have a living wage. And of course we're cognizant of the fact that they also have to take into account the cost of fuel. But I think that labor together with industry have managed to move the wages of the workers with the approval of the level that at least we can see that we are getting closer to that then the levies, I think I have spoken to them in the previous slide. There are a number of levies. I think they're self-explanatory. The one levy that tends to also when public is talking about late is really the fuel levy and the road accident fund levy. I think they, from our perspective and what we have seen in the region, we have a road accident levy in this country, and every citizen is able to be compensated or affect everyone. Is able to be compensated when there is a vehicle accident. Of course, we do know that there are challenges in terms of the abuse of that, but also then how it's managed in terms of people who then get medical attention in foreign countries and then have to pay for them currently. I think that is something that needs to be looked at, because if a person goes to a hospital in a foreign country, then the cost in dollars, for example, if it's a US citizen and have to go to a hospital in the US, it's still entitled to compensation. And then that's just kind of. So some of these things are not necessarily what we normally read about. Yes, the main areas that need to be tight in terms of health, but the cost of, you know, paying compensation to someone who goes to a foreign institution is quite significant, especially given the length of the country. And this is an area in which that that's not present, and I think they will be better placed than it's more fully. The fuel levy, our approach, we have engaged with our counterparts in the region. They don't have a fuel levy as high as ours. That is a fact. However, they also don't have a road network infrastructure as developed as ours. And that also is a fact. So we do meet with them. We do exchange notes. We have meet twice a year. And we exchange notes for a few of them. They have other means of raising revenue. However, we must accept that we have a road infrastructure network which is fairly advanced, and I think this has got, you know, there has to be something that caters for this. And again, here, I'm talking to it, however, it is our colleagues at Treasury that are better placed to expand on it. I have spoken to the BSP and talking about, and in fact, the minister explained the geopolitical event and the international demand, which is the bullet number 3, as well as the currency fluctuation. You know, the fact that we also factor in the international benchmark prices. But I'll explain in the next slide what goes into that. Next slide, what goes into that. So effectively, we have in the basic fuel price structure, and I'll need guidance if I'm getting too technical. In the fuel price structure, we then assume that there is a price or product that is basically loaded onto a vessel from the reference, the refinery, let's say Italy, because we use for Europe, we use Italy and then other countries as well. To that, we add price, cost, insurance cost. When you transport fuel over the ocean, there is a loss. That loss is covered. The cargo dues have got to be paid. coastal storage, the financing, as well as the demurrage cost. And this is the cost that you basically incur if your vessel cannot be offloaded at the port. So here on this slide, we just wanted to indicate the reference to the refineries that we use. For petrol, we use what we call the Mediterranean. We assume that 50% of our fuel comes from Europe, and we use Italy as a reference because they have a well-developed refinery infrastructure. Singapore is well-known, so we assume that half of our fuel comes from there, and basically then the local refinery must then compete with those refineries. For diesel, again, we use the Mediterranean as well as the Arab Gulf. And Arab Gulf, basically, it was a Kuwait refinery that was used for that. We do mention some figures there, but what we wanted to point out is that we currently use the DSP. In the past, there was something called IVLP. And we changed from IVLP to BFP. And when we did that, the economy, effectively, in the first 12 months, we were able to save $13 million. And the IVLP stands for import and cost. But that's a term that we used at the time. Then, I've spoken to freight rates, so to the crew on board, then get what the freight rates are from the Freight Rate Association, which publishes this every year. And then I would want to just talk to the last bullet there, that the rate basically based on supply and demand for vessels, as well as the risk for vessel owners. So for example, in South Africa, when we had the pirates on the Somalian coast, that basically had an impact on the price that was paid. So the fact that has been managed went in our favor as well. And to that, insurance costs are then added, and basically we just wanted to show what percentage insurance costs go to. Then this is the cargo use. These are set by the port authority, and these are paid basically to utilize the harbor infrastructure. You have to recover that. Ocean loss, the current ocean loss that is there, you assume that when you transport fuel, you basically lose 0.2% of whatever you had loaded at the port where you loaded the fuel. 0.2% of that is lost on the voyage. I do want to indicate that perhaps to technical, but we felt that it is important that we leave the information here and the need to capitalize and exercise on it. Then the coastal storage is placed to cover the cost of self-explanation, and that is basically escalated with PPI every year. Stock financing basically is the cost of the product, finance the product itself, and that has got to go into the price of fuel as well. Then the marriage that this indicates is basically the delay of what you, if your port is not efficient, we cannot claim the one that we claim the first. So effectively they need to recover, because for each day that the vessel spends at the harbor, basically you have to pay for that vessel. And we allow for 3 days for that. But also it is important for me to explain the third bullet, to say that because of the depth of our port, basically we are not able to bring bigger vessels. And if we are deeper port, we would be able to bring bigger vessels, and then see benefit for the cage. Effectively is higher than So we pray. But effectively, we have for the previous month been paying more than what we should be paying. Because we're always a month behind. So we then say, oil industry, you charged us more in the last month than what we should have been paying. So for the following month, you are going to have to do so much. Then the price goes. And then if it's a reverse, that then it's a reverse also of pain. If in the previous month they were losing, let's say 20 cents, we sell it to a 20 cents less than what it was costing them, then we are the ones that owe them, and then the price then was before. Effectively, that is a term that we use. There is a science behind it. There's no downside. That's why it's published every single day. And in the years since this has started, we've never gotten it wrong even by half a cent, ever. And the fact that it's published is for members of the public, academics, and everyone else to be able to say that that figure does not look right. And this is why it's sent to all central economists and all of them on a single day. So when someone is predicting that the price is going to fall or the price is going to increase, effectively they are using figures that are published by itself on a daily basis. Why is petrol cheaper in neighboring countries and yet the petrol is going up? Effectively, what happens is that let's say take a month and take August. First of August, there are prices that basically are published by the refining centers that we refer to, the Italian one, as well as the Singapore. So those prices, we then say every day, how much would it have cost for a liter of 95 from that refiner? So that price is obtained from the refiner itself, not from anyone else. Okay. For today, and for every day, then we get that. So we're able to compute for this one day and say these are the prices that we got, but we were paying this much. It means we were underpaying or overpaying. And you can always go back. This is an audited process. We have an auditor who checks all the figures every single month. And of course, because it's public, apart from the auditor, members of the public and effectively monitor the academics, as I said, economists are able to monitor when they are on a daily basis. So, in terms of the petrol being cheaper, I think the big difference, as I indicated, is the levy. That's what the difference is, the fuel levy and the road levy. That's the main thing. They don't have these, we have these. that's the fiscal framework that has been adopted. I think, yeah, I did explain the policies of the government. So that's the main thing. Why is that all not selling as for the 12 times? Well, again, here, if you have a regulatory framework, that regulatory framework cannot say that you don't believe it is correct for a regulator to say that because you are a domestic private owned company, that is producing oil from, petrol from coal, you must then subsidize the rest of the industry. It doesn't work like that. Especially if the company is privately owned. So where does that debate belong? It's based on whether the benefits that accrues to a subsidy. That debate belongs in a tax regime, does not belong to the regulated type of regime. So we don't believe that that is for us in terms of the regulators, because the playing field has got to be level for everybody. Sasol imports crude oil for the Sasol bank finance. As much as other refineries also import crude oil. So to have a rule for this one and not for that one, I think it doesn't work in a regulated environment. But as Minister has indicated, what needs to happen in South Africa is that we're going to be able to find our own crude oil. And that framework for that to happen needs to be accelerated. The issue of the deregulation of prices, again here, we need to approach this perhaps following section or having in mind the current reality of the South African situation. One is that you need to have certain things before you deregulate. One, if you are to deregulate the price of fuel today, the retailer basically all opt for self-service. So you lose those 55,000 workers overnight. Now, that's the policy position that would better serve us. From where we stand, we don't believe that we can, that's a sustainable position to be in. But also there are no guarantees that if we deregulate, the prices will come down. Because it also depends on your distribution infrastructure. How efficient the distribution infrastructure is. Is the infrastructure, is the sufficient independently owned infrastructure that each player can extract efficient response. There's one pipeline that brings fuel on the coast. All the companies are going to use that pipeline. The one import SPM, as I indicated, that is shared. If each company were to bring crude oil on its own vessel, because in a deregulated, that's what probably would happen, then the economy would even pay more because you would bring smaller vessels. Currently, they are able to bring together one vessel, say, my part is 200,000 barrels, mine is 800,000 barrels, and basically they charter one vessel and we benefit from that as an economy. So the issue of deregulation, I think the infrastructure that we need to have blame and believe in that infrastructure. And also the important is the issue of transformation of the sector and would we be able to effect transformation in a deregulated environment. We don't believe that is feasible. Because all you will have is that you will have traders that come in here. They won't invest in any refiners. They will just invest in import terminals. And those refiners that we have will close effectively open. Because we will then not be able to manage good companies to pull water. So there are a lot of factors that you have to look at. And where deregulation has happened, take the one of them. You have to go back and deregulate. And it's not easy once you deregulate that. There have been problems with other jurisdictions where this deregulation has been attempted. And there's a problem. But of course, it's something that I think we continuously are looking at. If you hear it, then you have to pass. We have to have a competition commission that is able to then monitor the playing field to make sure that it is there. So there are a number of factors that you need to be looking at. Then the issue of ULP 95 being quite sensitive, that they are explained to the demand side management level. It's not paying on the cost. So that's why you find ULP on the cost is cheaper than oil. Why is government not buying oil from African countries at lower prices? The way we look at this is that would we sell platinum at a lower price? Or would we sell gold at a lower price? You know, or would we want to maximize? And that's how they look at it as well. The countries that the minister attended the meeting of OPEC, Angola is a member of OPEC. They set the price. Nigeria is a member of OPEC. Victoria is a member of the COP. They sit there and they want to maximize revenue from what they are endowed with, which is good for. So it is those discussions are never that easy. They are no friends when it comes to commodities and prices of commodities. But this is a drive or a direction that I think Minister is focusing on in terms of the issue of the energy supply. We believe that it may soon be implemented. Thank you very much.
is more of a clarity issue. But I think my trust on your mind.
Can you unpack this statement?
in a simple language. Maybe to explain it in African language, because these African languages, people can understand that nice and short. They are not taking that. Number two check. Relates, comes from the presentations from our honorable minister. I want to be educated about this issue of petrol price hike. You see, the result that presented the honorable minister, the monetary policy committee will be meeting next month. And there's a possibility that they will hike the interest rates by 25 basis points as early as last month. Now, if the rent successfully peaks to 15% the dollar and continue with it, the South African petrol price will be at a risk. At the risk of rising further, and there will be negative impact on the cost of feeding. The masses of this country, the people of this country, it will be a very difficult blow to them, because if this tax goes up, food prices also goes up. And the majority of the people of this country are not working. And even those who are working to that problem, because what? The said says that the 20, if you buy last financial year, if you buy 29 items, it was costing you 3,600 rand. Last financial year. And this year, 2018, 29 items cost 3,800 rand. Those you normally buy, you buy shoes and medicine and those small items, they're basic. Now, what the better question is not good. It's not good about this business because the better high finance. Above the average, won't be able to afford to buy some of these items. Can I be educated, please, about this very monetary hiking of the interest rates by the next meeting? Is there any possibility that the interministerial committee can be able to intervene and plead with the Reserve Bank not to hike the rate? Because if they do, it is going to affect the petrol high price. And this is going to also affect the us as people of South Africa. Can I be educated about these things and also plead with you, Minister, to intervene if it's possible? You, the Minister of Energy and the Finance Minister, to arrange a meeting with the Reserve Bank. To say, can you please, I'm not quite sure, can I be educated, but then I think with the Minister of Finance and our Minister of Energy, Comrade Chair Kade, please, can you, with the powers vested in all, thank you very much.
Better than an empty row of chairs, but we were And secondly, I'd like to hear if the government has done an assessment of the impact of deregulation on the fuel price. In other words, liberalizing the fuel price. It immediately strikes me that that could reduce the fuel price, potentially reduce the increased competition. But it could also increase the fuel price because it's in the oligopolistic sector. So there could be some benefits, but there could be costs. And I'd like to know if that has been looked into by the department. Thirdly, are you looking into price smoothing mechanisms to protect consumers and the economy from volatility in the fuel price? Is that something that's being considered? I know other countries do have a fund where they're able to smooth out any shocks in the oil price. Then my colleagues have mentioned the fuel levy. Obviously, that is a huge cost driver of the fuel price. About a third of the price of fuel is through the cost levy, and as you've already heard, our neighbouring countries have much cheaper fuel because they don't have the exorbitant fuel levies we have. In Botswana, for example, the fuel levy is only 40 cents per litre, and that's why fuel in Botswana is so much cheaper. So, could you give us some more detail on the discussions with Treasury? You did mention that you have been in discussions with Treasury. Could you give us some more detail about the discussions? Have you looked at customer fuel levy? Have you looked at where that money could come from? And can you give us some more detail about the time frame and the review that you're undergoing with Treasury on the debt? In February, we will have a new budget. The last budget, 7% increase in the general fuel levy. We saw a 15% increase in the RAF levy. So these are huge, especially the RAF levy, a hugely above inflation increase. And I'd like to ask the Minister if he will consider talking to the Minister of Finance and ensuring that there is no above inflation increase in the fuel levy. Because I think that's the kind of commitment that could go a long way. And on the subject of the RAF levy, now in the last 10 years, the RAF levy has increased by 350% in 10 years, 350%. But in 2012, the RAF declared a deficit of 16 billion. In 2017, the RAF declared a deficit of 54.7 billion. The road accident fund is mismanaged, it's corrupt. We read in the newspapers a few weeks ago that the RAF was renting off $1,600 per chair. Renting chairs, paying a price per month that they can actually buy the chair for, if not more. So this is where the fuel levy is going. Now, we're throwing good money after bad. I'd like to know how we can justify continuously increasing the RAF levy when the RAF is so profoundly mismanaged. And I'd like to know what discussions we're having with the department. Then on the exchange rate, the Minister mentioned the exchange rate as a key cost driver. And of course there are global factors that are causing a weakening of demand, and we all know what they are, through the trade war and deterioration of the Turkish lira. But does the Minister acknowledge that local factors also play a role in the weakening of demand? So, in other words, does he acknowledge that not just exogenous factors to stop the weakening of the rand? For example, having a press conference at 10 o'clock at night, making a premature announcement about a progress about compensation. 2 weeks ago this happened and you saw the rand depreciate by 50 cents against the dollar. Does the Minister accept that these kinds of announcements are harmful to the economy, harmful to the rand, and help increase the fuel price?
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you to the department for the presentation. I want to also ask a little bit of Honourable Matala to say, I think somewhere in the presentation one would get lost because of the technical information. I think at some point it was difficult to understand, especially when Makobe was doing the presentation. And the fact of the matter, Minister, is that the price of the fuel is higher than the neighboring countries. And I want to agree with Honorable Davis, my colleague, to say that you were looking at the plan, what the government is coming up with, to make sure that we mitigate the problem. Because the problem is not only affecting business, it affects ordinary South Africans. And I want to recall Minister when you said that the best way to mitigate the impact of high price is to drive less. I'm not sure, Minister, if that is practical, because people have to go to work, we have to drop our kids to school, we have to go and buy food. There's so many things that they unreliability of the public transport as well, which will have an impact on the price, on the cost. In terms of the strengthening of the rent, I think I'm covered by Gavin, my colleague. But with regard to the downstream sector, Minister, is there any way efficiencies could be improved in this sector by, for an example, moving the refinery closer to industrial hub? And I think this question was also asked by another member. And I want to say, in as much as the presentation is done, but there's a lack of information. I mean, I also want to ask him, Honorable Matara, to say, if I get out of this door and an ordinary citizen of this country is calling me to say, what does the minister say? So I want to strengthen the fact that, Minister, if I'm not clear in terms of your presentation, what the government is going to do to mitigate this problem.
$0.37 gives us $60 billion, $60 billion a year. drive anywhere, look at the position of the earth. That's what this is actually for. It's not only for the fuel. I agree we have a system where people putting the fuel in your car and all that, and we're paying for all that. We, for example, in Botswana, they pay 10 rand 73 cents a litre for their fuel. So if you take the road, actually there's some trusted fuel there, but it doesn't even make up to that. You know, most of the other countries, African countries, that get fuel from us, they pay just over 11 cents. And 46% from Nigeria, from African countries, Nigeria gets 50% of our food comes from Nigeria. 60% comes from Angola. That's 46%. So we don't really, we have a massive insurance coverage and everything for our fuel, for the fuel that comes from, we get 40% comes from Saudi Arabia, from North, yeah. 40% comes from Saudi Arabia. That means only 14% that comes from Europe that you've mentioned, or the Med. So, I don't know, maybe you can give us answers. Why do we pay this massive global debt? When we get it from Africa, we sell it back to Africa at much lower prices. They don't even have a road accident fund. We don't even have a road accident fund. The basic fuel price, it's influenced by the high cost for shipping and to get it from that. And the fuel price has a blanket effect across the South African economy. 80% of all our goods are produced by road. 80% of all our goods. Sorry, I'm just reading in my notes. Households spend $80 on fuel. The poorest of the poor. That's why I'm here. The members make, my colleagues make, heartfelt to the minister to say that a fuel price is the poor pays approximately 10% of their total income on fuel and in public transport. Fuel prices increase, and also in 2008, fuel prices was the highest ever. Fuel prices, and not just our reserves, at 136 rand per barrel. Prices were 145 rand and 31 cents a barrel in 2008. In 2014, our imports were 14 billion rand. Now our imports is about 8 billion rand. So that's a huge difference. It's a huge difference. It doesn't bring new things together. We're paying now 16 rand a barrel for fuel. Really, I think that the African public and everyone needs some answers on this. And some of our questions. That's why they get thanked.
Go through this to help us understand.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister. Maybe just to start with the capacity. I firmly believe that we have the capacity within the state to manage this. We don't believe that the sector will regulate, as well as the economy, as I said, academic, found fault on how the old pricing framework currently works. There are tweaks because it's a dynamic environment. We're working on those to try and respond to some of the development. So if I'm allowed, I'm going to request Minister that some of the team members assist me on explaining. But the one of under recovered and over recovered, to simplify it, I was trying to look for another common that we can use and say that, let's say you were importing maize from the two centers that I indicated, the Mediterranean as well as the Arab Cup. And in both those markets, there is a pricing point that basically on a daily basis gives you how much the price of maize is on that day. So you would obtain that price for the previous month on a daily basis. Say that a ton of maize would cost this month on the first. This is how much it costs on the 1st of July, 2nd of July, and so on. Similarly here, it is to say a liter of ULP 95, on the 1st of July you would have paid this much, where if you had assumed that it was produced in Italy or in the Arab Cup, because we need a reference. Now, the question has been, so basically what we do is you compute those daily prices for the previous month. They will tell you whether then in the upcoming month you then need to compensate the one who was selling you fuel. Because if in August, we are now in August, if in August we are paying, let's say, 16 rand per liter, and yet the refinery that you are using as a reference was selling at 16 rand on average for all of the land, it means that you basically have over-covered by 1 rand. So it means for the month of September, you then have to claw back from in that 1 rand. So the price then drops by 1 rand. I'm not sure if that's explained. Now, also felt it important for me to address the issue of the white, Italy, and Arab countries, and not Nigeria and others. It's because the import parity assumes that you imported finished products. So you don't apply import parity on crude oil. You assume that you imported finished product, and Nigeria and Angola don't have you know, refined that is so well stable, that then we can use as a benchmark. The discussion we're currently having, you know, within the tube as well as the treasure, say the trends now are showing us that we are importing a lot more from India, finished products. Now, that has got implications, because then if we are going to apply import tariffs, we then need to change the refinery. So those are some of the things that we are currently looking at, to say, this importation from India, is it over a long period of time, or is it just something that's happening for 1 year? So we can't change the regulatory framework based on the 12 months. So if it is a trend over time, and India will always look well filled to China. So the trend will continue going forward, so it means you must change the reference. But then before you change the reference, you say, what would it do to the price? Would it take it up or take it down? That exercise is the exercise that the team, they are properly here with you. This is the team that we have to do that way. So I have not sure if there are more technical questions. the first voting account, we've been there at the column. There was the first voting account, and when there was a spike in the price of fuel, I think it was late early 2000, then the first voting account basically got a process in a couple of months. So if we had the price moving account, it would have been exhausted by now. But also, I think it's something that is not advised, even in countries seen in the US. There was a proposal, but in the US, the price increased by 15 US cents a liter. There was a proposal there from the public that there must be a tax holiday, that they must, do away with the tax. And I think the political authorities there advised against that, and also advised against intervention of government in the prices of fuel in that situation. So the price voting account, yes, can be there. We can feel that when the price, let's say, $29 again, you exhaust that very quickly when the price moves up. So rather pass the lower price to the consumer, the lower price of food oil, and then when the price moves up, then people to drive efficient, and driving efficient is not driving less. It's basically to say, just reducing from, this happened in this country, I was young at the time, when the speed limit was just reducing from, if you're used to driving at 120, drive at 100, you basically use the pay for fuel as much as you were paying responsible. That's the way we do it. But I think it's the education that we need to go and tell people that actually that 20 kilometers on your consumption makes a big difference. And rather this area and then drive the speed and in fact impact the road accident and on the issue of the technical team between ourselves, the minister spoke to, the two teams are led by myself, as well as the DDG of Ammonia, the DDG of National Treasury. We basically are looking at quick wins. And we have not, gone to the level of discussing the fuel because we believe that Parliament has voted on that on this current financial year. If we make proposals, it will be proposals and going forward. But currently there is a budget that has been approved, and we didn't believe that it is feasible to go this route. And we did look at the fact that the US, as an example, is tax holiday. All the excess that said we would rather not go change the policy.
companies that have to invest quite a bit in terms of changing some of their specifications because the oil from different countries are also not the same. So they have to reinvest so that they can then import what would normally have been the Iranian oil to import from other countries. So these investments and things that are impacting on this thing. So they can't just decide today to be nice to Nigeria tomorrow they have to put their own systems of things that actually are at fault. But again, as I said, we will, as governments and ministers say, the availability in Angola, the rest of the companies would look and look at what they would need in terms of the specifications of the oil, and if it fits in with what they have, then they would go there. And, but they need to be sure about the use of supply and all the systems that are around there. So while we might open the way, but the decisions are finally not out, I think that's kind of what I want to say. On the issue, I think, linked to the feeling fuels as well was the issue around the price. But another important factor around the issue of particularly finished products goes back to where you started around efficiency. The capacity of some of these refineries to produce in South Africa to a level where they can compete with the imported products. So those factors also play a role in that. Because right now, while we are importing a lot of that finished product which doesn't cover our own needs, there's also a lot of product that's imported through South Africa but for a number of the new countries. So there are all those factors that need to also be built into them. But the upgrade of the refineries and everything, but we also are aware that here in the Western Cape, I'm sure you're aware that a number of terminals have also been built for the importation of finished products. So the traders have also seen this as an important market. And, I guess it's about business. I think the issue of deregulation has been touched on, and maybe the minister will speak around some of the interventions he has been asked to make on international treasury or Department of Transport or whatever around those. Then there was a question around setting up refineries closer to economic hubs. I think if we speak to those companies, they will tell you all the reasons why it needs to be closer to the coast, which means to the source, and the implications of the transportation from the coast to closer to the hubs, and a whole lot of different kinds of aspects that I think is difficult for us to ask them to do that, because then we the contrabeing to the Democratic Alliance. The presentation
our people probably deserve a health information, but I'm happy that the DA also has the opportunity to listen to the president and respect his name like he said. I think Chair there also some changes that have been raised. But whatever is possible at any time, we can be able to provide more information. But we also request also the members of the committee to also make proposals to us so that we can be able to put your inputs into the process that we are going forward. But we really appreciate.
Basically, that the overall price and the current discount.
We have the fuel levy that colleagues just spoke about as well. The fuel tax from that year went up from 127 to 337, what it is now. It's 165% increase. And we just said regulation is there. And I've said it before, I agree that we cannot simply cut the electric prices. There's too many other factors involved. There's too many factors. There's a lot of factors involved also in labor and everything from that year to now. A lot of things have changed. 2014, we imported for 15 billion rand of fuel. Now we do 8 billion rand. So there is some questions and some answers. We are not the same car that is in business, the role for you to partner and the world partner of all the business. That's what the regulation is.
Okay, and a quick response. Very quick indeed. Especially on the minister. I remember what you want to do asked about the birthday. I can answer
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
I just think the statistics, I don't know if the colleagues will have the data, but clearly we're importing much, much more than we were importing 10 years ago. Maybe what would have been useful would have been to have a breakdown in terms of how much oil we're importing, how much finished oil we're importing. But both of them have been really exponential.
Thank you. Can we close? I'll accompany you on our matter. So I think on closing note, we very much concerned about the fuel at the cabinet from the minister, so is government. So something has got to be done. So minister will be able to. So what we can communicate to our people is a complex problem. As we report, we put in all of our. So, but you're losing it. End of September.